Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our guests and listeners to The Socialist Insight. Today we have Bob Maskey. He was on a few weeks ago, and we were discussing socialism and also socialist or liberal, and we were given the various viewpoints in regards to how people could understand the difference between the two. Today we have Bob. He's on the program, and he will be discussing with us the dark side of capitalism. And we see, you know, potentially people look at a dark side of capitalism here in the U.S. and also is how it's affecting various world markets and the economy of the world. And Bob, I'd like to once again welcome you to the Socialist Insight.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for thinking of me, and thank you for inviting me on.
And Bob, of course, it was on a very short notice. We had Justin Jones. He was supposed to have been the guest on today, and we were contacted at the last minute in regards to Justin not being available for the program. So as I mentioned, once again, I'd like to thank you for joining. Bob, you know, over the past century, millions of Americans have believed that a U.S. capitalist system is the right type of economic system for the country. Now we can see today more adults and young people are starting to realize that capitalism is not working. Bob, why is people coming to that conclusion?
Because capitalism doesn't try to solve problems. Capitalism tries to make money. That's all. There's nothing to it. If it can solve problems and make money, it'll do that. But if it can make more money by creating problems, it'll do that too.
Right.
So So there was a time, I think, when capitalists and capitalism was humming along and they were making a lot of money and they kind of left us alone. And I think over the last couple of decades, that's turned around and they've just been coming at us, trying to get every nickel they can get out of us.
Now, you know, after the last election, it was a survey that was done where it was estimated that, well, in the survey it said 53% of Democrats that were in the survey believed that socialism was a better system or potentially was a better system for an economic system for this government. And we can see that that has, you know, has been on a drastic increase, and a lot of that has to do with many of the events that took place right after the crash of 2008. Now, we can see that, you know, capitalism, you know, has had certain benefits in the past where working people were able to enjoy short-term gains, and then always those gains, they were lost.
Yeah.
Bob, if you were to look at capitalism, where it has worked, because people are always asking, where is socialism working today? Let me ask you, where is capitalism working today?
Historically.
Because I know people ask you that same question. They ask me all the time. Well, where is capitalism working? Where it has worked for the long term?
You know, I think this is the wrong question that people are asking. The point is, and I think if you're a socialist, you know, if you don't identify yourself as a Marxist, you at least respect Marx. And I think Marx was basically saying that capitalism was a necessary thing. You know, before capitalism, we had royalty. Royalty ran everything. They ran the economy. They decided who the elite would be. I mean, capitalism was a big improvement over that. It was actually even more democratic. But Marx and socialists also understand that or hope that we outgrow it, that we can move on, that socialism is not a competitor to capitalism. Socialism is the next step. That's what we go after. We've gotten sick of of this kind of a capitalist system. So, you know, I mean, does capitalism work? It works for getting us away from a royalty-based system, sure. Does it work in the long run for working people? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. So where have you seen capitalism? Where it has you see it's the next step? Where has it worked in this?
Hello?
And at what time?
Where has it worked in the past?
Yes.
You cut out for a minute. I didn't quite hear it. But
okay.
Where it worked in the past is it made the working class. Capitalism made the working class out of farmers. I mean, before capitalism, we were serfs. The average person was a serf. They were virtually tied to the land. They were slaves. Capitalism helped create industry, helped create the large cities, the urban areas, and created a working class. That's where it was successful. It created the means for us to get rid of it, is what it actually did.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's outlived its usefulness. It created the conditions that we need. It created the society that we need. It created an intelligent, you know, helped give us public schools. It helped educate working people. It helped create the conditions where we could join together into unions and things like that. But I think it's gone on far too long.
Now, what we've seen over the years, Bob, we have seen certain promises that have come from this system that we live in. As young people, promises that if you go to school and get a good paying, go to school and complete that, you'll eventually get a good job with that education, and also good paying jobs being available. But we have seen that this has only been another lie that has been perpetrated, even when it comes to our youth and capitalism.
Yep. And, you know, as I kind of said before, capitalism, if it can create problems to make a profit, it will. And what it's found right now is, as far as higher education, they can make a heck of a lot of money by indebting college students, young people who might be a little naive, who might not quite understand, or might go into the system thinking that their education is the people who are in charge of their education are thinking about them. They're not. They're thinking about making money.
Well, Bob, you know, one of the things that I like to take a look at the direction of the program today is because what I've seen from the system that we live in. We have gotten all sorts of promises, but many of those promises, in the end result, those promises end up being only lies.
Yep.
And as whether it was education, whether it was jobs, and what we're going to do is we're going to look at those various areas where promises have been made and where promises were broken.
I've got a great example for you, Stuart. You
sure.
know, if you look at companies right now. They're all green. Every company out there, Starbucks, Walmart, they all say they're green. They're all saving the environment. Then why is the planet still going to hell?
Good point. Very good point. Yeah, and that's a very good point. Everyone's green. If you go to your job, it's green. You know, it's how can we have recycling? How can we make certain that we clean our environment? But I think a lot of that, being green, there's a cost that's involved. And we have seen so often from capitalism, they try to take shortcuts to make certain that they protect profits.
Yep.
So subsequently, when it comes to whether we go green or protect our profits, we do that. And
it's a lot cheaper just to put a green label on your website than it is to actually save the environment.
Right. And one of the things that I look at, and a lot of that has to do with people when they look at the cost, there's a certain amount of participation that's required on the part of the public. And people, a lot of times, if they don't see where it's a direct benefit or an immediate benefit for themselves, then they take the pathway of least resistance. One of the things that was a good point that you brought up, Bob, was years ago, if I go back to the 60s and 70s, they paid people a certain amount to recycle cans and and bottles and papers and like that. And then you took those, even my parents did this, Bob. They took the cans and they took the aluminum, They took the papers to a recycling center, and they were cashed out. And then eventually we saw the recycled trucks. They would come up to your door, and they would pick that up and dump it into a bin, dump it into the trash truck, and people didn't reap the immediate benefits. It became easier to escape easier to avoid the time to recycle regarding the small benefits that they would be reaping from that. So it's a certain amount of responsibility that comes from the public, and it comes down to where is the financial benefit going to be. Now, what we see is the big corporations, they have seen a means by which they can tap into those profits and make certain that they take those away from the working people. So what we do is we find the pathway of least resistance. We throw the cans and like that in our trash can now, and then we dump it out the back door, and a truck comes and pick that up. And then you have a corporation. They're reaping billions upon billions of dollars because of they're not working people not seeing those financial benefits. So it goes, it ebbs and flows, and it goes both ways. But eventually, the corporations know how to master the profits. Would you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, on a maybe slightly different point, you know, pollution isn't the average person's problem. It's not not recycling that's the issue out here. That's not what's polluting our air so much. I mean, you know, it's a little bit, sure. I mean, we should recycle. Yeah, okay. But, you know, what's the sense of recycling when you've got these major industries dumping garbage into our water system? You know, they're fracking. They're polluting our water. They're polluting our air. This is massive amount of pollution. Recycling a can isn't going to do much for that.
Well, and the other thing is I work in the automobile industry myself, and if we want to also look at cleaning the environment, it's a lot cleaner to work toward technologies that are going to give us clean air, such as electric vehicles, hydrogen vehicles, alternative fuels. And we as working people, we still like myself, I'm in auto sales, we still like the big trucks. We like the trucks with the big mufflers and like that. And instead of taking that responsibility, again, the big corporations, they rather keep producing the big trucks and the fast cars that are quickly polluting our environment rather than individual responsibility and in a democratic way wanting to clean our environment by demanding that we have clean, efficient vehicles that will clean our environment. So, again, there are certain responsibilities on the part of the public, but big corporations are exploiting that.
Well, you know, here I would, again, just another side note, if the oil companies, for example, had to pay for the pollution they cause, gas prices would be so high that these big polluting vehicles wouldn't be affordable. The alternative energies would actually become affordable. This is where capitalism is like turning on itself. This is where, you know, the rich have gotten so greedy, they've corrupted so much of the system that they've gotten their tax breaks, and they're not held responsible for the damage they do it ends up being 10 or 20 years later that we discover how much damage they've done, and then it's almost like just too late to bill them for it, right? If they were billed if they were billed all along for the pollution that they cause to the clean up that pollution, the oil industries would go broke. I mean, and we would have to have more, you know, alternative energy systems.
Right, and that's a good point. Where you mentioned about the oil companies being responsible for the cleanup and taxing them for that, but we can see that they have their functionaries in Congress and also in the White House that only protect them from having those types of taxes imposed and also being responsible for those cleanups. But, you know, I agree with you. They should be responsible for that. But we can see that they escape those responsibilities only because of the people that they finance their campaigns to putting those people in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think over the last few days we've seen Obama sign and the Congress send him about Monsanto, where they can't be sued for the health damages their crops cause. I mean, you know, talk about you know, who owns this system and who is it protecting and who's it working for? It's certainly not us.
Bob, you know, when it comes to, you know, what we see in a lot of things that we have seen within the last year coming out of Washington, D.C., and we have the sequester, which is, you know, is going to be imposing a lot of austerity measures on working people. And then just recently, within the last few months, we have seen the feds where they have gone from dumping $40 billion to dumping $85 billion a month into this economy to make certain that they sustain this economy. But again, like I said, as I mentioned just a second ago, is that we have the people that are in Washington, D.C. Not only are they giving the big corporations the tax breaks and making certain that they are not held responsible, but now they are just outright creating money and just giving to these corporations, and also they're imposing various austerity measures already that we can see in the pipeline aimed at working people in the future and that we're starting to experience today. Where do you see this actually going within the next year for this nation?
I don't think it's going to happen as quickly as a year. But I think that a year, they don't want change to happen too quickly. They want us to adjust to change. They want us to adjust so that we forget how good things were, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I'm sure you remember when we were growing up, we used to have these ideas that we were going to have flying cars by now. We used to have these ideas.
Exactly.
You know, we used to have these ideas that robots were going to do all our work. Remember that? You know, that
right.
We were going to all, you know.
The Jetsons. We thought that was the future.
Right. You know, instead now it's looking more like the Fred Flintstones, right? Instead of the George Jetsons. You know, what robotics has done is it led to unemployment. It hasn't led to leisure time. It's led to us not having work anymore. So, you know, capitalism, again, getting back to your promises, capitalism has promised us all kinds of futuristic things that it never plans on delivering on. You know, the point of capitalism is not to provide for everybody. The point of capitalism is to provide for a very few, small amount of people. And once they've gotten all the money that they can handle, the only way for them to continue to go up is to take us down. They want there to be that huge gap between the rich and the poor, or even the rich and the working people.
Well, you know, when we talk about some of these promises and, you know, much of the monies that are being generated, it's being generated to help bail out corporations and also to generate massive profits for these corporations. And we can see a large amount of the monies that are being collected in this country is going to finance a highly mechanized military-industrial complex. And when we look at this country and the policies and the politics there in Washington, D.C., and the promises that are being made there, how serious are, when we were listening in the 60s, Johnson, he was talking about peace in our time, and then we heard all the lies of around 9/11, how we needed to go to war. How serious are we really about, since 9/11, about even pursuing peace in the Middle East and peace in our times? Because we can see that massive amounts of monies are being used for the military-industrial complex in this country that is falling on the backs of working people to cost.
And that's not the worst of it. The worst of it are the people we're bombing. I mean,
right.
I mean, yeah, okay, we have to pay for it, and that really bugs the heck out of me, but, you know, we aren't yet the recipients of those drones. We aren't yet the recipients of those bombs. And it seems like we have a war going on, women and children. We, you know, it doesn't even seem like we have real enemies anymore. It seems bizarre to me, and even more bizarre, so many working people who should understand a little better seem to support this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
right. Well, and just back to what I was saying about around the events that took place in, around 9/11, and the story that was created that, you know, there were weapons of mass destruction. Was
yeah.
there any reason possible that, any reason that you could see from the events that were taking place, because you were there, I was there, all of us could see what was taking place and what was being spoken of on the national medias. And, of course, a lot of that was lies. But even in retrospect, were there any reasons that were existing that justified this nation going to war against those countries in the Middle East?
Absolutely not. And you and I and hundreds of thousands of other Americans knew it even back then. We were out
right.
in the streets back then. They want to ignore us that we were out there. They want to say, like, we were Hillary Clinton. We all thought we were all bought into George Bush's lies. You know, we were all in this together. Bull, we were not in this together. We lefties were out in the streets trying to stop it before it started. And there was no reason we should have gone there. We knew it back then. We knew it 10 years earlier than a lot of the other people figured it out. But even now, in hindsight, most people finally agree with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, even in hindsight, after they realize, and even Bush has come out since, and say, well, we didn't find the weapons of mass destruction, but those people still wanted democracy. Mm-hmm. Was it a good time at that time for us to withdraw all the forces out of those two countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, and pull those forces back and end those conflicts at that time? Was that a good time for us to take measures to end those conflicts?
What time specifically do you mean, Stuart?
At the time when we realized that, when the American public realized that there were no weapons of mass destruction, when they
yeah.
came out and say, we cannot find these weapons of mass destruction. Even the UN, the representatives from the UN were saying, we can't find these weapons. Was there at any point after 9/11 where we could have actually just said, let's pull the forces back because we should not be there? Was there a good time, any time, or are you just saying, and I'm saying we shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Yeah.
But after the fact, when Americans could see that, you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction, to say, let us bring our forces back.
Well, you know, this is George Bush had the idea that this was going to be a capitalist paradise when they went into Iraq. They were going to turn it into this free market utopia where the wealthy were going to go in and they were going to raise everybody's standard of living. They were going to take government out of the picture, you know, as opposed to what the United States government did after World War II when they went into Europe and they rebuilt Europe. You know, they didn't
mm-hmm.
want to do that this time. They wanted to do the New Orleans way of doing it, just, you know, basically hope all the rich people are, you know, find profit there and they'll all run in and they'll do something. So when that didn't work, what could we do then? I mean, you know, capitalism failed. Capitalism showed itself to fail there, as it did in New Orleans. It showed itself to fail as well. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
what could we possibly do? I mean, we had destroyed the nation. You know, I kind of almost felt we owed the Iraqis something. Maybe we should have taken all the guns out of there, but we should have left the Corps of Engineers, somebody rebuilding the
mm-hmm.
damn country. You know, I mean, it's pretty awful that we wiped out 100,000 of their population. We destroyed their infrastructure. We destroyed their health system, and you know, I mean, just leaving. I don't necessarily think we should have just left. I think we should have left the war behind immediately, but maybe help to rebuild the system a little bit.
Right. Well, you know, when you look at this, where some of the promises that were made, and one of the things was said afterwards, no weapons of mass destruction,
yeah.
but these people wanted democracy. Have we even brought democracy to either of those countries or any of the countries in that region?
I don't think that was the point. I mean, that's what they say. I mean, but they have different words for things than we do. You know, when we think of democracy, we think of, you know, a lot of people getting together and making a decision. You know, when they say freedom and democracy, they mean rich people being able to go in and make decisions for everybody else.
And what I see is when they say democracy is to make certain that we install our puppets so that we can go in and control the economy. And that's what we have essentially done. Is we have gone in and we have our puppets there and we control the economies of those countries. Surprisingly, because the majority of the people in Iraq and Afghanistan, the majority of the people, they prefer to see America out of their country. They look at us as an invading country that has actually come in and has disrupted their government. So when it comes to Our true intent when we went into those countries was really to be able to control the various resources of both those countries, especially with Iraq, because it had, you know, well over 100 billion barrels of oil. And also now those same threats are being directed toward Iran as well, because of the massive oil deposits that that country holds.
And getting to your point, I mean, you know, they actually thought that the Iraqis were going to thank them for destroying their country for them. And you're talking about Iran right now. Our big issue is North Korea. You know, we're beating war drums again. To never mind Iran, never mind Venezuela, which are, you know, two of the country's targets. I mean, you know, I'm really concerned about what's happening in, you know, over the skies of North Korea.
Well, part of what's taking place with Korea is because of the sanctions that this country has imposed. Because you're very much aware about the sanctions that we've had over the years, and has created extreme poverty within North Korea. And this is something that we have seen. Sanctions do not work. Basically, sanctions are an act of war against any country, and we could see that in World War One, Two, and also we see it today, where sanctions are imposed against countries, whether it's Korea, or whether it, sanctions that were against Libya at one time, also sanctions that we could see that were against Iraq as well. But this is just another act of war.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I understand your point about sanctions, but it also seems like the war isn't working either. You know, occupation
doesn't
work either. That just angers people. And, you know, you create it's, unfortunately, so many people have a short memory. I mean, you know, you create problems that you don't actually see the results of the problems you created for 20 or 30 years. And, you know, that we could say that what happened on 9/11 happened because of a lot of things. You know, certainly the Iranian hostage crisis back in 1979, that happened because of what we did in the 1950s in Iran.
Sure.
And,
right, exactly.
You know, so, I mean, these are short-sighted solutions to problems. You know, when in doubt, I just say stay it out. The United States just shouldn't be involved. Just, you know, I mean, why Americans are so gung ho? So many Americans are so gung ho about their country going to war all the time. I can't understand. It's their kids who are the ones who are going to suffer for it. It's the wealthy who are going to benefit from it.
Bob, you know, some of the things we're going to get, what I'd like to do is just very briefly just interrupt the program just so you can mention how people can be able to reach you, just spell your name, or if there's a website where they can be able to reach you. How would people be able to reach you if they have any questions that they would like to present to you in the future?
Well, I'm kind of in hiding, but they could reach me. They could reach me through you, Stuart, and I do have a Facebook page. I have a Facebook page. I don't have a lot of friends there, but you're welcome to friend me. My name is Bob, B-O-B, Maschi, M-A-S-C-H-I.
And also, what they can do, they can go to Stuart Alexander Cares. That's my personal website, StuartAlexanderCares.com. And any questions that you have of Bob Maschi, you can put those on that site in the comment section. Bob, we're going to get into a few other sections right here. Today our program is we are discussing the dark side of capitalism. And Bob had mentioned that there was a mistake in the way that we did the title for the program on the internet, where it said the dark side of socialism. And I think the dark side of socialism is a question that many of us receive all the time, is where has socialism worked? And they always refer to certain countries where they were in various wars and turmoil. And then they always relate that to socialism. But we can see that capitalism has not worked in this country. It's not working for working people when it comes to labor, when it comes to education, the needs of our seniors, the needs of health care. So we can see that there's many promises, and very often we can see that it is not working. Bob, we're going to get back to this this section in regards to the system that we live in and the promises that have been made for labor. We just saw recently, well, within the last few years, Barack Obama, he made promises that if he was elected in 2008, which he was, he said he was going to create a jobs program where he was going to put millions of Americans, over 6 million Americans, back to work, shovel-ready jobs. They were good-paying jobs. I don't believe that the president ever had intentions of creating good-paying jobs, but that was what he needed to say to get elected. He received $787 billion from Congress, and since then, he has received well over $3 trillion to help to revive the economy. Much of those funds, we can see, have only gone to Wall Street. But beyond the promises, was that Barack Obama, that he had the ability to, and this Congress, that they have the ability to create real good-paying jobs for working people in this country?
Oh, of course they did, but, I mean, you know, it's a double-edged question. I mean, you know, of course they could have, but would they ever have? No. I mean, you know, the people that are in Congress now didn't get there by being pro-working people.
So you're saying they never had no intentions of doing that?
Right. I mean, capitalism is screwing itself at this point, because good-paying jobs in the economy, rebuilding our rail system, rebuilding our transportation system, rebuilding our bridges, all these things would eventually make quite a bit of money for the capitalists. I mean, it really would. I mean, not doing that is, I mean, the environmental damage we're doing is going to cost more money to fix than it would to prevent. So capitalism being so short-sighted, being in such a pursuit of short-term profit, is in the long term not only messing with everybody else, it's also messing with the capitalist's own profits. But they don't see that. They don't see it at all. All they want is that daily number crunching, that daily profit, that quarterly statement that says that their company made more money this time. That's all they care about. That's all they're concerned with.
Well, you mentioned creating good-paying jobs, repairing the railways, creating the infrastructure, the highways. At some point, those things become necessary to repair. When they have received public funds, monies that have been set up by Congress for those things, why don't we see accountability from the people that are elected into office for those various projects or for those needs to be taken care of within our society? Because they should, and they do have a responsibility to the working people in this country to create good-paying jobs and to create also to repair the infrastructure in this country.
We would think so. Because this makes sense. It makes sense whether you're a socialist or a capitalist. Okay, it might not make sense if you're a libertarian, but, you know, to everybody else, it makes sense exactly what you're saying.
Well, we're talking about public funds.
Right. You know, I mean, so it would make sense to invest them in infrastructure. I mean, just about everybody could agree with that, except for the people who actually run everything. They're
okay.
The ones who don't like that idea.
Well, the thing is, what we look at is that this president and also this Congress, they're receiving, as I mentioned, hundreds of billions of dollars every quarter to be able to invest in this economy. But we don't see those jobs even being created today.
Right.
We see that those funds are being used only to invest in Wall Street and big corporations.
Yep.
So when the possibility of this Congress and this government creating these jobs, and when you look at the massive unemployment that we have today, we have well over 12 million people, according to their numbers, that are unemployed. We believe that it's well over 20 million people that are unemployed. But we're talking about where good-paying jobs can be created within our time. These
yep.
jobs are not being created.
Right. And it goes back to our original point about where every company is being green, but we're not saving the planet at all. You know, they it's all smoke and mirrors with them. You know, it's you know, don't look behind the curtain. I mean, you know, yeah, they're creating jobs, but not really. Yeah, they're spending
right.
a lot of money on the infrastructure, but not really. You know, the infrastructure
mm-hmm.
never gets fixed. Nobody ever gets to work. I mean, you know, it's all a game to them, and it's more illusion than it is in actuality.
And also, when we look at the promises for restoring the economy, talking about creating jobs and making certain that we keep jobs here in this country, how serious are the politicians in Washington about really keeping good-paying jobs here in this country?
Zero. They're not serious about that at all. Though what they might say, or if you got them behind a closed door, what they might say is, well, if we give money to the rich, if we give money to the corporate owners, the more money we give them, the more opportunity we give them, they might actually turn around after they've, you know, spent their money on all kinds of things that they didn't need. They might actually turn around and hire an extra secretary, or they might turn around and hire an extra gardener, or whatever. I mean, that's big, you know, the trickle-down idea that we have to take care of the wealthy, and then, in fact, they'll turn around and they'll take care of the working people afterwards. That's kind of what they think. I think that's what they think. I never got one of them behind closed doors.
What would you say was? I mean, obviously we have various trade agreements, including NAFTA, which was a North American Free Trade Agreement, which came under Clinton. Was there any possibilities of creating good-paying jobs on both sides of the border with that agreement when it came out under Clinton's administration?
No, that was never. That was. I can't believe that.
No intent.
I don't think so. I don't like the Clintons at all, but I don't think they're stupid either. I think
sure.
they pretty much understood. I mean, Clinton has come out since then.
For.
Yeah, Clinton has come out and said it was a mistake after that. But I think that's more because Hillary wants to be president. I don't think he actually thinks
uh-huh.
it was a mistake. This was basically. I think the whole thing was basically to lower the standard of living of the first world. I mean, to bring us down so that we stopped. You know, demanding higher wages so that we stop demanding better health care and better retirement funds. I mean, so that we stop getting – so now instead we have to scramble to make ends meet. That's the way they want it. They want us to be living in fear. Living in fear means that we don't have time to – we have time to work our butts off, but we don't have time to complain.
Right, because what we're doing now is we're competing with other nations and people in those nations making lower wages. Now, as you mentioned, is that we're not as competitive because now we're just in fear of just trying to keep our jobs. Because
right.
now you have people that will work either at half or sometimes at one-tenth of the rate that they would be paying here in the U.S. economy.
Right. And why anybody thinks that's good for profits, I don't know. Now that's one of those capitalist contradictions, because people with money in their pocket can make more profits for capitalists, but they don't seem to understand that. They're too short-sighted.
In regards to the various trade agreements that this country have, whether it's NAFTA or whether it's the Central American Free Trade Agreements or any other trade agreements that they have, are there any trade agreements that work to the benefit of working people, or should all of those trade agreements be looked at again and possibly even scrapped?
I can't imagine that the system we have now could create anything that would benefit working people. That is not the point of
our
system.
That's not the design.
Right. The point of the system is to benefit wealthy people. And again, if they can do that by helping out or advancing or raising the living standard of working people, they might consider doing that sometimes. But if they can do it by creating problems or lowering our standard of living, that's how they'll do it too. So I distrust the whole system. I distrust the people who are in there and who get to get in there.
Now,
how do you think, Alex Stewart? Do you agree with that? I mean,
no, I agree with it 100%.
Okay.
When we look at a lot that is being created under this system, including much of the debt that's, you know, third world debt, and also much of the debt that's within this country, debt that's been is being created with credit cards, debt that people have with their homes, students. Right now, it's over $1.1 trillion for students. And, of course, this is all for the benefits of a system that is not working for the working class. In your opinion, Bob, should much of this debt, third world debt, and also much of the debt is being created in this country, should we have a cancellation on that debt?
Well, let me get back to 1 second about the trade agreements. The trade agreements and the way that Clinton proposed them to us was basically, as I recall, he was saying, hey, you're going to get things a lot cheaper. That's what's going to happen. And actually, that worked. That worked for a couple of years, if you remember. I mean, you know, we got $2 hammers, right? We got, you know, we got, you know, 25-cent cans of peas. I mean, it worked for a little while until things settled down, until the dust settled down and the corporations figured out how they could get more money out of it. Then it stopped working.
Well, you know, that's a good point. I didn't really see things going down, but I could see that the price, you know, the cost of living is sort of stabilized for a while.
Right. Yeah.
And then I started seeing things going up again. But it's the cost sort of stabilized for a few years, and all of a sudden everything started going into the stratosphere.
Right. Right. So it wasn't long lasting. I think that's what Clinton was hoping, that it might have been longer lasting, but it wasn't. As far as your second question, you know, as far as, you know, whose debt this is, and, you know, should we be paying it off? No, this isn't my debt. This isn't your debt. Why should I be paying for drones to kill children in Pakistan? You know, this is not my debt. This is the wealthy debt. They should be the ones paying it. You know, and the way we make them pay it is we nationalize them. We take over their corporations and we take all their money away. And when they cry, we take more of their money away.
Bob, how is that possible? That's a big thing you're saying. Nationalize. How do we do that?
You know, that is a topic of conversation in every country except for this one. Every country, that's always an option. You know, if you go to Europe, that's an option. I mean, people might not want to do it. People might argue against it, but it's an option. It's something that they can discuss. In this country, as far left as we go is Paul Krugman, who, you know, I can actually agree with him sometimes, but he's a liberal. He is certainly not a socialist. He's got some good ideas. He's a Nobel Prize winner, so he's a smart man. But he does, you know, he's in touch on nationalism once in a while, but not really. I mean, more it's used just as a word he throws out there. But, you know, nationalism, the nationalization should be on the topic. That's taking over corporations, turning them public, and turning them to the benefit of people. That's where our healthcare system should be. You know, that's where our energy system should be. That's where our banking system should be. We don't have the right-wingers love to complain that we have some kind of a nationalized banking system. We do not. Our banking system is completely run by the bankers. It is not run by the public.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Right. And when we say we as socialists, we say we need to nationalize the banks. We need to nationalize the big corporations, the oil industry. But then when you look at the masses and the public, my first question would be, are we ready to do that? And I really don't see that. I don't see that we're ready to do that. I see a fear in people when you even suggest nationalizing anything in this country, especially the banks. Because they think, take over the banks. Well, they don't realize the banks took over our monetary system a little over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It was already done by the banks. But now, you know, there's a fear that we should take over and control our monetary system for this country, control the banks. And I really don't see where the public, even working people that are socialists, that mentally that we're ready for that.
It's funny, though. We already did. In 2008, with the crash, we bought the banking system. They were all broke. The government went in and saved them and
well,
then turned around and gave it back to the same people.
Was that a matter of perception, Bob? Is that a matter of only perception?
You don't think the banking system collapsed? Is that what you're
No, it collapsed.
Yeah.
No, it did collapse. And it was bailed out, and then they started the banks started printing money to save themselves.
Yep.
But did we really take over the banks? Did we really take over General Motors, and then eventually it was turned back over to General Motors? Did we really do that?
Isn't it amazing?
I mean, believe me, if I had been in charge when it was taken over, it wouldn't have been given back over to the shareholders.
Right. Well, to the people who caused the problem
bought,
in the first place.
When the bank was taken over, it wouldn't have been given back to the shareholders.
And that's,
but did we really do that, or was it only perception?
I think we bailed them out. We owned them. We owned them.
Now, you
by,
say
by
we.
Any,
who is we?
The United States government. The United States government owned the banks. I mean, you know,
okay.
and they turned around and just gave the banks back. Now, you know, of course,
now,
this
did,
isn't our
did
government.
Did you and
you know,
I and millions of other people give that back?
No, and I think we would have kept it. If we were the ones who actually owned it, we would have kept
I know,
it.
I didn't have no vote in that. No one asked me, Bob.
I bet it was part of your campaign, though, Stuart.
But anyway, what you were mentioning, right, the government, and then my question is, who is the government now? You know, the government, you know, we did bail the banks out, and we did own those banks and those big automobile manufacturers. And then the government, gave it all back. So who is the government? Because it wasn't millions and millions of people like you and me. We were on the sidelines watching on television or reading in our newspaper on the internet that, okay, this is being given back to these banks. And billions is being given to them, tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars is going to companies like AIG and other big multinational corporations because they were too big to fail. And then they were able to pay this back at low interest or no interest.
Yep.
You know, so who was we that made this decision? It wasn't working people like us.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, I guess when we talk about nationalization, we also should talk about local control. You know, I mean, I believe that working people, the communities, should own things like their local banks. I think that, you know, I don't necessarily think everything should come, you know, top down from the federal government. I think, you know, the cooperative banking, banks that know where to invest in the local economy, that are good for the people locally, that's where we should be going. Not where basically rich people give working people's money to more rich people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we looked at certain things like the economy, and we looked at certain things where it comes to labor. How serious is this government when it comes to taking care of the needs of our seniors and the future of even Social Security? Or is that just more flack?
Well, you know, you touched on another question. Where does socialism work? Right? You know, people are always asking us, where does socialism work? It's worked in this country. You know, we've got public libraries.
Good,
those are socialists. You know, we've got public education. All right, we have a lot of complaints about public education, but it does teach people to read. You know, we've got Social Security, we've got Medicare, we've got Medicaid. These are all socialist solutions, and they work very well. And they're always under attack by the wealthy. They're always trying to take away.
Another thing, Bob, is the post office.
Yeah, the post office is another. Even though that's in the Constitution, you know, even though these constitutionalists even want to get rid of that. You know, so there are lots of examples of how socialism can work, where it can work, but they're always under constant attack by people who don't even want working people to have scraps.
But, you know, Bob, what I see is always it is always under attack when we talk about for our seniors and social security. It's under attack, and then they turn around, and then the next thing we hear is privatized. And then we hear about education that, you know, is failing in certain areas, and then we hear that it needs to be privatized. and we hear about the U.S. Postal Service about how it's failing, which is not failing. The government imposed certain burdens for them to
yep.
finance future benefits and pensions. But we hear how it's failing, and then we hear that it should be privatized. Or if not privatized, then to make it so it cannot compete against other companies such as FedEx and other companies that deliver mail and bulk items. But we can see, whether it's for Social Security or any other thing, it's always we hear about how it should be privatized.
Yep.
So it's always that attack in regards to how can we create future profits for corporations and individuals from
right.
this.
Right, yeah. And, you know, let's be clear, privatizing is the opposite of nationalizing.
Right, exactly.
We should be going in the position of the direction of nationalizing, not privatizing. I mean, if wealthy people were less greedy and they would allow the working class to have, you know, proper health care and a decent retirement, working people would go along with it forever. But they're not. They're not going to let that happen. They want every penny they can squeeze out of us.
Well, you know, Bob, you mentioned about health care, and that's another area. You know, we've covered certain things, war, how it's for profit. We have looked at, you know, various, whether Social Security or other services that are available, even jobs, how they are being sent to other countries, and also is suppressing wages, but also gaining cheap wages, cheap labor across the globe. But even when we look at health care, again, we hear about a system that when we look at Obamacare, there are many socialists that even defend Obamacare. And this also we have heard about privatizing, how it is privatizing the health care industry. But as I mentioned, Bob, myself, I have come under attack from various socialists that Obamacare is good. Is this a system that can even work for working people?
You know, if they use this to crack the egg, if they used it just to make a little hole in the situation so that they could get more later on, then I might agree with that it was okay, that it was a good thing to just, you know, it was a first step. And I think that's what a lot of liberals think, that this is just a first step towards a much better healthcare system, that this is only temporary. But I don't think that's what Obama wanted. I don't think that's what
does it even come close to being where when we talk about nationalizing.
No,
is it, does
absolutely
it even come
not.
Close to where we can nationalize the health industry?
No, not at all. I mean, it went the other way. It was looking for that distinctly American solution, a free market capitalist, lets everybody can get rich solution to it. I mean, the one thing I like about it, I think it puts a limit on profits, and that itself could disrupt the system enough where it'll eventually crash. But do we really want a crashed healthcare system? No, we
no.
don't. We've got a lot of people who need the healthcare system, so. You know, is this going to benefit anybody? Yeah, it could help a lot of people who don't have insurance. It could help people a little bit, but that wasn't the point of it. You know, the point of it was to put money into the insurance company's pockets to guarantee them an income. It was almost like, you know, how the I just mentioned a little while ago, the Monsanto that Obama just gave them a free pass for any health conditions
right.
their products cause. You know, that was, I think that's what Obamacare was about too, is basically say, okay, you're going to make this much money, it's going to be secure, it's going to be government backed, and that's what you've got.
Well, Bob, let me, we have seen various areas where capitalism, you know, where it has, we have seen many of the failings of capitalism. And very often we start relating back to the 30s, how we saw many of the successes that came out of the New Deal. Was that a model for us as socialists for a better direction here in the 21st century?
I think on the cover of it, yeah. But it stopped short. The FDR didn't go far enough. He did not. As socialists, what we lose track of sometimes is worker control. We want the working people, the communities, to control things. When we keep that as part of the solution to the problems, people accept it a lot better. And it's true that they should accept it a lot better, because this is actual democracy. FDR didn't do that. FDR kept the banking system in as it was. You know, I mean, with a little, a lot more regulation, but that was basically for them to make more money. There were some things that were great. We were putting young men to work, specifically young men, to get them out of the house because they ate a lot. You know, they put them into the CCC programs and all. So there were some great things they did, the paying writers to work, paying actors to perform in local communities. But, without actually giving them control of what they were doing and making them responsible to the government and the elite that run the government, that was the problem. That's why it didn't work, and that's why it only worked for looked like it worked for a little while.
Well, as a nation, would you say that, and just looking at the millions of people that have been adversely affected by this economy, and of course you're not supporting the left candidates, which the left candidates are saying the same thing that you and myself are saying here in this program. But one of the things we as socialists, we say we're workers and the community members take responsibility for workers and community members take responsibility for and control of their interpersonal relationship, their neighborhoods, and their local governments. Are we ready for this as working people in this country?
I think we're ready for it, but I don't think our eyes are open enough to it. I don't think this is a solution that is getting out there. I mean, if they're not listening to you, Stuart, that where are they getting this kind of this viewpoint as a solution? There's a few websites out there, but we've been shut out. We've been shut out of the debate, and our solutions are shut out of the debate. Like I said, even nationalization, every other country on the planet talks about nationalization. We can't even talk about it in this country because nobody even understands what it means. So, I mean, there's a curve here of education we have to work on. Are people capable of doing what we're talking about? Absolutely. But they need
and
to...
And Bob, one of the last things I want you to just
sure.
to share just before you came on the program today, I see a lot of people on the left, they're saying that they're getting away from Twitter, they're getting away from going on the Internet, from Facebook, and they're, like, shutting themselves out. What's with this trend that's going on today that you see many people on the left that are removing themselves from even communicating with each other through the very sources that we have been saying that we want more communication where we can be able to reach people on the left? What is going on today?
I think the left is frustrated. I think the far left is frustrated. They understand that this is the time when people should be listening to us most, that we have the solutions that aren't being offered by anybody else, that we are proving ourselves correct, that every time there's an issue out there and we give our opinion on it, we prove ourselves correct eventually, and still we can't get up on our soapbox anymore. They've taken all our soapboxes away. So there's a lot of frustration going on there, and it's a mistake. Lefties got to be out there. They've got to be out in the comment sections. They've got to go to where the working people are, and the working people are online right now. It's not the time to be turning your back on technology. It's the time to be embracing it, getting out there where the working people are. And you're doing that, Stuart, with things like this program. It's great.
Well, Bob, you're always an excellent guest, and I look forward to having you back on in the future. You came on very short notice. We were supposed to have Justin Jones was supposed to have been on as our guest today. Bob, at the last minute, only minutes before the program, he stepped in for us to be our guest. And Bob, I look forward to having you back on in the future. You always have a lot of food for thought where we have something after the program is over, something to think about. Thanks again, Bob.
Thanks, Stuart. And maybe we'll disagree on something sometime.
Okay.
And
again, thanks for joining the Socialist Insight. We see you next week. We have Alan Mackey. He'll be joining us once again on the Socialist Insight. Thanks again.